True.
You're listening to Truth Revolution Radio. We're broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network. My name is Cosmos, and this is the official broadcast of truthaction.org. We're promoting, organizing, and representing international action for 9/11 truth and justice. We want you to get involved. Go to truthaction.org, check it out. Join us in this fight for justice. Our guest today is a man who I have the deepest respect for. Bob McIlvain is a 9/11 family member. He lost his son Bobby at the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001. He was a part of the group of family members that forced the United States government, after stonewalling for more than a year, to form the 9/11 Commission, which was charged with investigating the events of that day and which unfortunately resulted in a multi-million dollar whitewash. He is certainly one of the most outspoken critics of the ongoing cover-up of 9/11 and a courageous advocate for truth and justice for 9/11. It's my great honor to be joined today by Bob McIlvain. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thanks, guys. I'm on my way home from New York. Can you hear me?
Bob, hey. Welcome to the show. Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
First, I just want to personally thank you for your courage and perseverance in speaking out.
Well, guys, I mean, I hate to be called courageous. It's like anybody who loses their son, I think they'd want to find out what happened. I mean, I think that's the natural course of my life. I mean, that's anybody's life would be if they lost a child and they never had an investigation. So it's like I'm obligated. I really appreciate you saying courageous, but I just don't feel courageous. It's just, I don't know. It's just, this is what you got to do. I think any parent would have to do that.
In the wake of 9/11, did you first expect that there would be a legitimate investigation into what happened that day?
Yeah, of course I did. I mean, you know, even into the investigations, I remember points. I guess it was more hope. You know, certainly if you knew history between the Kennedys and then, of course, Iran-Contra, you knew that investigations didn't work, but of course, yeah, it would. And there were times during the commission hearings that I remember when Richard Clark stood up there, everybody was so happy. You know, here's a guy who actually apologized to the family, although I'm not a fan of Richard Clark, but at times, you know, I sort of went through an evolution during the commission hearings to the point where, you know, I was just so disgusted. But in the beginning, it just pushed at something, that there would be some answers and someone would be held accountable. You know, I wouldn't have never gone to him. But first, I found out that just doesn't happen. That's one of the big problems. No one's ever going to be held down in this country, it seems. You know.
At what point did you realize that there wasn't going to be any kind of real investigation? nation at all unless it was fought for.
Well, I tell you, the two points that always stick out in my mind is when Mueller, the FBI head, I remember people listening, he became FBI head right at 9/11. Picard was the, up leading up to 9/11. He was the acting FBI head. But it just shows you how an investigation goes, or how their investigation goes. At times it seemed like they were trying to get at answers. They really did at times. Like Ben Denise, Romer, sometimes they really felt like, you know, geez, they're trying to ask tough questions. Well, anyway, one time with Mueller, they asked him about the Saudi Arabians leaving the country. And basically finally came down to say, well, who in the State Department let them go? Let them leave the country? You know, it was a pretty big thing at that time. They say, here they, you know, the day after 9/11, they had Bin Laden as the one executing this terrorist attack. And then suddenly 2 days later, they're letting all these Bin Ladens go. And of course, in the first joint congressional hearings they had 28 redacted pages concerning Saudi Arabia. So at that time, you know, you figure that's a good question. So when they asked Mueller, well, who in the State Department let him go? And he says, well, I don't recall. Well, to me, if someone says to you, and this happened a lot, you know, I don't recall seeing it come up a lot. Well, if I was an investigator, I said, all right, I'll give you 2 weeks to recall, then come back to us and tell us. To me, that would be the logical thing. I don't care who said that to me. You know, they don't recall. I said, well, find out. Recall, then I'll give you a week. I can give you 2 weeks. You know what I mean? So I was really disgusted with that. But, of course, the one was Condoleezza Rice and, you know, the August 6th memo. And Ben Venice was really grilling her, it seemed like. Now, remember, every commissioner, anytime anyone was there, the tops, they had 5 minutes to try to ask questions. And that was it. So you couldn't get too far with anyone, you know, if you really wanted to ask probing questions. But anyway, Condoleezza Rice, Ben Venice was trying to get after. He kept saying that, you know, the August 6th memo said something about Bin Laden to attack the United States. And she said, well, it was historical. Well, she just kept filibustering. And it was the most disgusting thing you ever seen. It just went on. And each commissioner talked to her. That's all she did was filibuster. She wouldn't give a straight answer. And it was just a disgrace. Well, the worst thing then, after she got finished talking, and she was, you know, the last one, everybody gets up, even family members walk up to her. Everybody's smiling, shaking hands, and I just went absolutely nuts. I went to the back, and I had an interview with Canadian Broadcasting, and I went nuts. I said, this is absolute, you know, bull. And I was just screaming. I couldn't take it anymore. I said, you know, this is the biggest shame there is. And then with that, you know, I must have had 40 microphones in front of me, and it just seems like, you know, you have to lose your temper. Everybody's civil, and afterwards, here they're investigating the murder of my son, and everybody's smiling, shaking hands, you know, like, well, big deal. You know, she wouldn't ask her any questions, yet the people who are trying to get answers are up here talking to her and smiling. So that's when I just absolutely gave up on the commission. It's so ridiculous. I guess it was David Connolly. And there was a lot of others that, you know, I don't recall stuff, and Ashcroft and Picard. But yeah, Ashcroft and Picard. Picard said to Ashcroft, well, I warned you like 70 times during the summer. And Ashcroft says, oh, no, yeah, I don't remember. Well, there's someone lying. So they're lying. Well, who cares? You know, the commissioners, I just let it go. Well, to me, if I'm investigating, I say, well, one of these lying. We got to get to the bottom of this. And if they're lying, then they should be going to jail. So this is, you know, the whole thing. But Condoleezza Rice was the worst. That's when I just absolutely gave up. You know, there's no hope for this.
That's when it became evident that it was going to be a sham.
You know, everyone sort of thought it was because of Picard and Ashcroft. You know, there was a lot of incidents, but you just could tell that they're not there. Then you'd read things, they're not there to blame anyone. You know, I remember Curry saying that. And of course, when Max Cleland left, he was one. He seemed to be a champion of the families, and he walked away from it calling it a sham. So.
Yeah.
And it was. It was an absolute chance, so.
And this is after you guys forced them to do something. They stonewalled for over a year. It was something like 400 and something days. before this, you know, crime of the century had any kind of official investigation, even going through the motions.
Well, Cosmo, here's a very important point, and you know, Ben Vidi said it. I don't have documentation to prove this, but I was there when he said it. You know, I was there with the lunchroom. So I don't even know if he said it on the, you know, during the commission hearing, but I know for sure he said it, and he said, this is not an investigation. It is merely an exposition. And what is an exposition? I mean, I remember Jamie Gross telling me this on the Paul Zahn show. He says, if you really just, we laid everything out, and it's up to people to find out the information. So they, from the very beginning, it wasn't an investigation, because it was an investigation, you're trying to get answers. Well, they accepted the story of the government, and then they're just laying out certain things, and they're protecting the government. So, you know, it should never be called an investigation, because from the get-go, it wasn't. That's what I think the mandate was. They said to get the truth, but only through the government agency. You know, that's the only ones they're dealing with. You know, then it goes on, you know, with Valentine and all the other crap that blow up a little bit. So it shouldn't even be called an investigation.
It shouldn't be called an investigation. An exposition.
It is an exposition.
A show.
Yeah. Like
a show.
Going to an expo, you know?
A multi-million-dollar show.
That's an exposition, yeah.
A fraud. We'll be right back on the other side of this break with Bob McElvain on Truth Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network. This is the official broadcast of TruthAction.org, and today we are talking with 9/11 family member Bob McElvain. And in the previous segment, Bob told us exactly when he realized that the 9/11 Commission was a sham. A fraud. They weren't going to be doing any investigating. And as Commissioner Ben Venise said, it wasn't an investigation. It was an exposition. Bob, I'd like to get a bit of chronology here. Just, you sort of became an activist by default in the wake of 9/11, trying to get some kind of investigation. You became involved with this group, 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. When did that happen? How did you get involved with that?
You know, in the very beginning, I you know, like you said, I had nothing to do. The Jersey Girls, you know, I'll never take any credit where it's all their credit as far as getting the commission. Like, I was always involved in it, but they're the real strength as far as, or the core of the people who got the commission. I know them all. I've been involved with them, but, you know, I just was sort of, I was always, whatever thing was going on, I was always there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But before that, in 2002, being down in Philadelphia, you're really out of the loop as far as New York's concerned. And I just, you know, the idea of them going to war was just, I just couldn't see it. I certainly wasn't positive. My old thing, my evolution sort of came about that everything happened in America because of blowback. Now, that was my first thing. And with Peaceful Tomorrows, it gave me a good vehicle because the whole idea, it comes from Martin Luther King's speech. I forget exactly, but an eye for an eye does not bring about peaceful tomorrow. So they formed this group in 2000. In fact, it was February 14th, 2002. And I knew of them, but then I got involved with them. I think it was September 2002. So I was doing mostly peace work. And I think where I really came out finally was right before the war. I was involved with Peaceful Tomorrows. I was going marches and things of the sort. I really wasn't speaking at all. But I decided right before the war, I wanted to be Monday the 17th. because the war started March 19th. It was the 17th we marched on the White House. And they wanted three people from our to lead the people that wanted to get arrested. So I got arrested. And that was my turning point, because you find through that type of activism, it sure opens you up to the world. Because I had so many interviews, which that's all I want. I want to talk to people. You know what I mean? So you do something like that, but then you have to press call and, you know, you talk to people from around the world. And that's one thing I've learned. That's what you do. You know, you have to, like, get some of these rights. I screamed and yelled. I was so pissed off. But then people suddenly wanted to talk to me. So with that, then, you know, I became more active, but not as far as the 9/11, well, the 9/11 Commission hadn't started. And then with that, I remember as Peaceful Tomorrow's, we went down into the congressional hearings. The big blue book that came out with the 28 redacted pages and all. And this is an interesting story. Can I tell you this real quick?
Yes, please.
You know, David Petorti, who founded Tomorrow's, and myself, went down to Lee Hamilton's office after the book was given out. And we had, I remember this, I was talking to the press, and Bob Graham was sitting right, standing right next to me. And I really sort of blasted America. I said, look, this happened to my son because of our damn foreign policy. You know, in essence, that's what I'm saying. You know, it's been, you know, we've been taking over these countries so forth and so on. I don't know if that's what I said. And I know Bob Graham was a little ticked off at me because, you know, I think he wanted everybody to say, oh, this is great. We have, you know, the information on 9/11. Well, anyway, some woman was in the audience, you know, shaking her head. Yeah, yes, 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 yes. So after it was all done, you know, Bob Graham walked away from me, and the woman came walking up to me and gave me a hug. She says, I think you're right. And here was Bob Graham's wife. at that time, that sort of made me feel good. But anyway, so from that, with Peaceful Tomorrows, I went to Japan. Oh, in fact, I went to Bogota. There's a conference on violence around the world, civilians killed around the world, and there's at least 2,000 people there. And I was able to speak to them, and that was quite an experience because I talked to people from Argentina, Chile, Guatemala, you know, people have really suffered during the wars of the 70s and 80s, and of course, because of, you know, so many of them said because of the Chicago police from the University of Chicago, which at that time I didn't fully understand. And that was a phenomenal experience. And then I went to the 5th anniversary, or the 60th anniversary of Hiroshima. My wife and I went over there, and we had a big stone, it's called a stone walk, and each stone is in honor of all civilians killed in war. And basically what we're doing is honoring civilians killed, and of course that's mostly the guys. So that was in walk from Hiroshima to Nagasaki to Hiroshima, and speaking in all these towns. And basically, again, speaking of, you know, the wars are idiotic, and we create some of these wars and stuff like that. And then I evolved into the, once the 9/11 Commission started, I started going down to Washington by myself every hearing, and I sort of broke away. You know, I wasn't that involved, and I haven't been involved with people before since then. And what I do now is I just do nothing but 9/11 work. Hopefully I can get a book out. It's really a matter of connecting the dots to me. There's no question in my mind this government is part of the orchestration of 9/11. It's those events that guys. And, like, right now, I'm concentrating on the people who talked about Al-Qaeda and our connection to the Muslim Brotherhood and fundamentalists for the last 50 years. And to me, it's almost like you need a course in 9/11 to truly understand why this government would do something like that. You know, we can go through all the facts about 9/11, and everybody, you know, and I've been doing this for so long, people do shake their heads when they talk about the foot options and they talk about the buildings. But just doesn't seem to sink in. They just won't admit that, geez, you're right, the government could do this. Yeah? They'll just still walk away and say, I just can't do this. So I want to somehow, some way, prove, you know, if anything, if I write a book, only if my family members do this, that they can pass it down, at least I have some way to do this. This is what governments do. This is what our government does. This is what all governments do. You know, it's all about power. It's all about money. Well, mostly all about money, but it's money comes out. So that's my evolution. So the Peaceful Tomorrows, I'm still a member, but it was a phenomenal experience. And then, of course, as far as the commission, you know, once I got involved in that, I just can't. It's like a thing is that we talk about ending war and all, But until we get the truth about 9/11, I don't think anything's going to change because it's easy to set up another false flag event and people jump on the payline. So you have to prove to people this is what they do. It's just not Bush, it's just not Cheney, this is government. You know, and we can prove forever that no one is ever held accountable. So that's why, you know, they're trying to stop the accountability of this 9/11 person. Or just trying to stop the truth of it. So that's basically my evolution.
So the event, the action where you got arrested, that was in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
That was at the beginning, right around the beginning of the
invasion? That was 2 days before the 19th. That's when I hate to call it a war, the occupation of Afghanistan. Iraq. And that was a great experience. We were the ones that went to nonviolent training, they decide they wanted peaceful tomorrow, so about 50 of us decided to get arrested, and they wanted the peaceful tomorrow people to lead the group. So we walked up, and there was a line of 50 cops, and behind them the horse soldiers and all. And I walked up to the cop, and I said, look, just let me through. I don't want to make this, and he opened up his arms, let me through, and then immediately put the cuffs on me and took us away in a paddle wagon. So it worked out great. But to me, it's just that type of activism. It's just, I can't get arrested. I don't want to get arrested. I'm afraid of doing 6 months. Like, I used to do stuff down in Georgia. Based down there. School of America, And, like, people can get arrested down there in 6 months. And I couldn't handle 6 months. Because a lot of people have asked me if I wanted to do more civil disobedience, but I said, no, not right now. I tell you, but if a lot of parents did it, I would do it. If not only the parents did it, because that would make a huge difference.
Yeah.
You know? But doing it myself, then I'd be just turning into the woodwork. That'd be the end of it.
Well, as you were saying before, at a certain point, about a year after 9/11, you viewed what happened on that day as the result of what they call blowback or reaping what we've sown around the world. And now you've got a very different perspective of it. I want to talk to you more about that on the other side of this break.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully get a better connection too. And,
is your connection bad or is it mine?
I think it might be yours, so maybe we'll have you call back in, and we will be back right on the other side of this break for the second hour of Truth Revolution Radio.
That's it.
Radio. We're broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network. My name is Cosmos, and this is the official broadcast of TruthAction.org. And we've been talking with 9/11 family member Bob McElvain. We had a bit of a problematic connection there. So Bob's calling back in, and hopefully he will be rejoining us very shortly. In the meantime, we've got a caller on the line calling in from Pennsylvania, too. I believe this is John Gold. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hey, Cosmo, how you doing tonight? Cosmo.
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, I couldn't hear Bob really well, but, I know his message so well that the little bits and pieces that come through, you're like, oh, well, that's what he thought.
Yeah, Well, you've been stirring up a lot of stuff over there in Pennsylvania recently with just out of these hosting these movie nights out there in Wayne, Pennsylvania, and getting a lot of publicity for it recently.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. You know, Betsy and I have talked often about the time that we chose to do this. If you think about it, I mean, in the last 3 months, we've had the destruction of the CIA tapes. We've had the Sybil Edmonds story break 3 weeks in a row in the London Times. We've had the story about Philip Zelikow in the book The Commission by Phil Sheehan. And, you know, we also got the military tribunals. So all these things 9/11 related are happening in this time frame. We couldn't have picked a better time to do it. And, you know, we were thankful for Jeff Cobb and Mainline Life to do the article that they did that got a lot of good press. They received several letters to the editor, and they were all positive.
Yeah, it was like a double-page spread, right?
Yeah, it was on a page that we had our quarter-page ad on, and it was like an entire section of the newspaper was specifically for 9/11 Truth. It was funny. And then Don Giordano, who's a radio host on the Big Talker Radio, 1210 AM, in the Philadelphia area, which is also a station that has people like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, a few of our other favorite people. And somebody sent him the article and told him what was going on, and he had Betsy and I on. We interviewed him last Friday, and then we found out this past Tuesday he came to the Anthony Wayne Movie Theater to interview people, and he came dressed in a tinfoil hat. So I was furious about that. I wrote a little article saying that Don Giordano mocks effort to help 9/11 families and 9/11 first responders. I mean, when we started doing this originally, we were handing out flyers to people saying that the families are calling for a new investigation, the media is ignoring them, we're trying to help them out. That's exactly what I was saying to people. So, number one, we're helping the family members get the questions answered that they want answered and the accountability that they want. And, you know, all proceeds are going to the Feel Good Foundation, so we're helping the first responders. So he comes out and he decides to wear his little tinfoil hat and mock us. It was so pathetic. I mean,
yeah, that really disgusted me to see that. It's so incredible, and he acts like he doesn't even know what this movie's about. And he goes over there in his goofy little hat mocking you guys, and that was just really completely pathetic. And I heard you call in to that show last night, and you issued a challenge to him actually to come and to watch the movie and actually to meet with Bob McElvain and talk to him.
Right. After that had happened, after Betsy had showed me the pictures of Don Giordano in that hat, I called Bob McElvain to tell him because I just couldn't believe it. And he was furious. He wanted to talk to him. You know, he wanted him to come to the movie theater to... You know, I'll let Bob tell you what he wants to do.
Yeah, Bob's back with us now. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Cosmo. How do you say, John?
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Yeah, I want to get him in a room by myself, and he has to sit with me and tell me why he did that, and then that he has to stay with me and talk to me about that. You know, I don't want to in front of cameras. You know, I wouldn't even mind doing a show if I'm the only one there and I could face him face to face.
Well, that would be interesting.
And tell him to admit to me that he thinks my investigation is foolhardy. He's going to wear that effing hat of his. Then
right.
God knows where it would go from there. But I mean, you know, I just want to see him help. You know, am I allowed to? I guess I can't curse. I'm pissed off I am. You know, because, I mean, And he has to understand that some way, somehow. Like, you know.
Well, he said, I don't know if you heard the interview, Bob, from last night. I was on with Don Giordano, and after I had gotten off, he said, you know, I don't want to debate a 9/11 family member. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, of all the people you're going to listen to, don't you think it would be a 9/11 family member? Don't you think it would be? Go ahead.
Because you can't debate it.
Right.
I mean, you know,
exactly.
he's a media whore, and he doesn't know anything about 9/11. You know, how can he possibly debate it? You know, he doesn't want to make, you know, all these people, you know, Hannity, and they don't want to make themselves look bad.
And it's funny because they even say that. I listened to this last night, and that's what this guy said. He's like, he's like, you can't win. There's nothing you can say. And it's like, well.
Right.
Yeah.
The thing that pisses me off about Don Giordano is the fact that he's making the argument about whether or not our government would be capable of being complicit in something like this, as if to say all of the cover-ups and all of the unanswered questions and all of the non-accountability is acceptable. You know, all that's okay, but don't you dare even insinuate that our government was complicit or elements of our government were complicit.
Well, he'd get a big story. I'd come right out and say, we'll start the whole show. He says there's 100%, 150% positive the government orchestrated the murder of my son, period. Now let's start from there. What do you got to say about that? You think I'm a wacko? You know, and then I'll sit there for the next 5 hours if he wants, and he won't be able to say a word. You know,
I think that he should have you on his show for a full hour. I mean, if nothing else, just as for penance for that really repugnant and appalling act that he did over there in Wayne, Pennsylvania.
It has to be face-to-face. I wouldn't do it on telephone. You know, he
right.
has to face me, or I won't do it. Because, I want him to see the anger in my face, you know. And I want him to see that this is not a civil thing. I don't want to walk in there and shake his hand. You know, I'm not going to be violent or anything, but I just want him to know I'm pissed off. I want to do this show to prove to you, or prove to the people, that you have no clue what you're talking about. And then basically,
right.
I would say to him, you're a media whore, whether he likes it or not. You know, so it would be nothing nice. He wouldn't have the guts to do that, because he's gutless. All those people are gutless.
Well, gutless and clueless and shameless.
Before I came on the show last night, he mentioned, you know, his Zionist handlers and stuff like that. You know, again, mocking us.
Yeah, well, but he's not worth it. He's a nobody. Yeah.
Right, but I was thinking about, you know, that he does reach 38 states. He does reach Canada. I mean,
yeah.
it's beneficial, certainly, to to at least maybe we'll reach someone.
Yeah. But in most of those shows, it's a non-win situation. You know, I just learned that from being on all those shows, that you just, no matter, if you get on a roll, boom, they'll cut you off, it'll change the subject. It's really difficult. Like if he, you know, again, if I went on any show and I was guaranteed a full half hour, an hour, that they're not going to kick me off the stage, or they're not going to cut out, you know, like if you had a couple people on the monitor, there one's from Philadelphia, one's from Los Angeles, well, they just cut you off. You know, you might have to be making a good point, oh, we got to go to commercial. So it really, it's really, really an impossible situation, especially when you're on the phone. But, you know, face-to-face, if I'm guaranteed with anyone for an hour, you know, but no one's going to do that.
Well, that's why shows like Cosmos are so important.
Yeah, of course. We get dialogue. You know, I want to hear what he has to say, but I don't think he has anything to say, except that the government couldn't possibly do that. Well, you know, my point would be, well, what has the government done things like that? That's all they do.
Have you ever been given any airtime on TV in the U.S.? I know you've been on Canadian television, and recently we saw you on Italian TV.
I was on Polazon twice. I was on, who's the one I just told you? Who's the worst one? I'm losing my mind. Who is it? Kennedy, Combs, Riley. I was on the O'Reilly show once. And he was actually, you know, I said, you know, I was coming out of commissioner hearings, and they asked me to come up to New York. I said, look, I'm not coming up to New York because I would, you know, at that time I was so angry, and I said, if he says anything smart to me, I think I'd have to swing on him. I was so upset. I said, I'll gladly do it in Philadelphia, and I said, if he gives me any crap, I'm just walking out. You know, I said, don't start talking about peaceful tomorrows. Just talk about what we're talking about. You know, just talk about my son or what I, you know, it was those commission hearings. I don't know what exactly they were at that time. But the thing, and he was good to me. You know, he didn't, you know, make me look like a fool or anything. But the thing is, he cut me off just when I felt I had some momentum on a talking point. And he just changes the subject. And that's what I mean. It's just so difficult to go beyond what they want. And that's the problem. Like, Paula Zahn was great. You know, she was, but I got a real curveball there. I thought I was just going to be on there, but I didn't have any idea who was going to be on. And, then they had Jamie Garlick and Slade Gordon on. And, so that, you know, she really threw some curveballs at me because it's very difficult to go on if you have no clue what the questions are going to be or what direction they're going to go.
Yeah, it seems like you just pretty much have to have in mind what you're going to say and say it regardless of what they ask you or where they try to take it.
But the thing is, they just change the conversation, you know. And I showed a lot of anger on that show, but then it's when Jamie said, well, you have to understand if we, you know, I don't know if she said we're not blaming that. She said, I can understand your anger, but if you read the report, and this is like the day after the report, so obviously I hadn't read the report. She said, if you look hard enough, you'll find all the information you need. So that's basically all she said to me. But, yeah, so, and most of the people are nice. Like I said, even Bill Riley, you know. But that was, well, you know, certainly if he had me on the show now, and knowing what I represent, he would come after me. But again, if I were with him one-on-one, it wouldn't bother me at all. But I know somebody, oh, I forget his name, his father died on a plane.
Jeremy Glick.
Yeah. Yeah, and he almost got in fisticuffs on the show. He went after Jamie, or Jeremy. So, you know, it's tough going on those shows. It really is. But now they won't, you know, because I've been on shows, and people have actually said to me, says, you know, it's really difficult to have a family member on here because they really can't do their thing because they're going to look foolish, you know. So that's why they won't have them on.
We've got another caller on the line. Let's talk to Eric in California. Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Good, how's it going? Hello?
Hey, Eric, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, how did you know my name? I didn't talk to the screener. Hey, yes?
You got a question for Bob McElvain?
I do. Well, not so much a question, but just I just want to let him know that, you know, I totally feel for him, and it took me a couple of years to wake up to 9/11. Actually, it took me getting high-speed internet service to really start to delve into it, but I just want to let him know there's a lot of people working very hard, very tirelessly to get people to wake up. I don't yell and scream. 9/11 was an inside job. I just get people to think and start questioning and start the questioning process, on their own. I think that's the most effective way. And, I will not stop until the people responsible are hanging from trees. But frankly.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric.
No problem. And God bless you.
Thanks. I really appreciate that.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
All right, Cosmos and Bob, I'm going to let you guys go.
All right, John.
All right, John, good to hear from you, man. Keep up the good work out there. And
I called Betsy, you said hey.
Yeah.
Keep calling up that guy. Give him hell.
All right, man.
That's just shameful. Well, we've got all this, I don't know, Bob, if you can hear this, I don't know if the listeners hear it, but for me, I've just got so much interference on the line, and I think we did have a bad connection with you before that we've got a better connection now, but I've got all this noise in my ear, so it's very difficult, but we are heading up to a break right now. Hopefully we can get this sorted out, and we will be back right after this break on Truth Revolution Radio. Stay with us. We are back on Truth Revolution Radio, plagued by technical difficulties, but persevering.
The edge for me. But not that if someone came up to me and said that, I certainly wouldn't have disbelieved him, and I wouldn't have jumped down his throat. But, I was just trying to use the historical perspective that I had at that time, that these things happen. Like, I didn't want to go to war because you just had, I sort of accepted it was Bin Laden. Well, let's just find him and put him to... put them on trial. Instead, we go to war in Afghanistan. And, of course, what happens? All these innocent civilians die. So I sort of existed on it. I was on the fence. You know what I mean? It really wasn't until I, got into the commission here and just realized that, this is my first experience listening to these people. And it was just the whole scenario of it. It was just, all the family, all the questions the family members are asking, they're ignoring it. And, and then finally, the final thing is there's no offense and buts about it. But I still sort of say that they let it happen, And there's not many people who want to come out and say, and again, when I say my government orchestrated, like Eric said, he says, I don't go around screaming and yelling inside job. Well, it's not that I go around screaming it's an inside job. You got to understand what the world is. It is money. It's bankers. So obviously, someone in our media had to be part of it. Bankers, and if you knew that we've been dealing with the Muslim fundamentals, the Muslim Brotherhood for the last 50 years, they can orchestrate anything they want. And that's what I challenge anyone to do, is just you have to read history. And all the books that are out about 9/11, like Peter Dale Scott's new book, Road to 9/11, just trying to make that connection. But so many people just don't want to take that step. They still can't. I don't care how involved people are in this truth movement. They can't get involved to say, yes, the government did it. Because government, it just sounds, it's too wide open. But they have to understand that for the last 50 years, since Iran-Contra, there is no such thing as accountability. We live in a covert world where they can do anything they want. The CIA can, the FBI. I mean, Mueller should be, if anybody's hung on a tree, he should be. I mean, as much as he's lied, he's been proven to be lying. So all these people, that's what they do. They go around the world in covert operations. Where does all this drug money in the world go? It goes into banks, and our banks are part of that. And that's what people have to understand. It's just, again, not Bush and Cheney. It's our government. This is what they do. So, I that was part of my evolution. I really did believe it was blowback, and we just have to think through our foreign policy. But now... this is the way it is. I think this is the point of no return, and they're going to do anything to keep this going because they can keep the war on terror. It's like the war on drugs. We had a war on drugs, yet we're providing the Afghan militants and the fundamentalists there the opportunity to sell drugs into Europe, and then it all comes to America. And we certainly know this, yet we have a great war on drugs. Well, people make money on these wars. And that's what it comes down to. Look at the money these people are making on this war. Billions upon billions upon billions. And it's just, Eisenhower told us, he said, the main thing we have to fear is this military industrial complex. Well, they've taken over. That's what people have to realize. So what's 3,000 people? Millions upon millions of people have died in the last 50 years. They don't care. They don't care what happened to 3,000 people. And don't forget, what is a psychopath? We probably have a lot of psychopaths, genuine, bona fide psychopaths running things. And I think that's how psychopaths get the power. So, it's not that far of a stretch for anyone to understand that. But they, they just don't want to go right to that point. It's too unbearable for them. But, there's no question in my mind. I mean, this is how things operate. that's going to continue to happen. We're going to have a perfect fall guy, all these billions of people in the Middle East. Now, we'll have this terrorism going on for the next 200 years. And it's up to them. So it was, you know, I went from that, you know, thinking that they might have known, you know, and the blowback because I spoke for Peaceful Tomorrows. You know, I didn't want to speak just 9/11. I wanted to speak at the innocent civilians. My son's an innocent civilian. Well, what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, be around the people that survived, the Hibakusha in Japan. It was just wonderful because, and that's why I'll tell people, I said, please don't show sympathy for me. We have to stop this insanity. That's what the Hibakusha told me. You know, they're the ones that survived Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And they walked with us on the stone walk. And that's the main thing that I got to have. They said, don't show sympathy for me. I just want to end this insanity of nuclear weapons, of war, and things of this sort. And you go down to South America and you see these innocent civilians that keep dying because it is policy. It is our policy. And it's just unfettered access to the natural resources of the world. And I want people to realize that more than anything. This is what we're killing people all around the world. So my son, just, you know, he's just another number with all these people in Guatemala and Chile, everywhere. Bangladesh, that was because of our policy. What, 1 million die there? Well, people forget that immediately. And that's what has to be done. People just have to recognize this fact. And that's where I eventually want to go, that people just realize that, God, this, all governments do this. We have to take over these governments around the world. And that's, I don't know, that's where my hope lies, you know, because, yeah, the 9/11 thing, I just keep talking about it. And, you know, that's why I spend more time now talking about Al-Qaeda, that we've been dealing with these. This is what we do. It's like the when we had the Cold War with Russia. Well, the KGB and the CIA and everybody knew each other. They used to go out to lunch with each other. It was like, you know, if I was best friends with you for 10 years, you know, but we do our own thing. Oh, let's have lunch next week. But we're mortal enemies. You know, well, that's the way it is with the fundamentals. They've been doing this forever. The Muslim Brotherhood used to help the Nazis. It creates chaos. Governments want chaos. That's all they want. Because they make money off of chaos. So this is,
now we've got a former U.S. congressman saying that basically Al-Qaeda is an arm of the U.S. government.
Well, of course, people aren't going to understand, though, an arm of it. You know, they have to do more research. I agree, I understand what he's saying, but if I say that to someone, they just look at me with glassy eyes.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Let's talk
more about this on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government. You still think that jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center? Does anybody else see a problem here? If the government has nothing to hide, why are they so afraid to answer a few questions? This story does not add up.
Transformation, because it's, you know, as you get older, it's amazing. The more knowledge you get, the more you realize how little you know. And I've evolved into this. I've transgressed into this position where I know now for sure, there's no question in my mind that the United States did this. Or, you know, it's very important how to phrase that. It's not the United States, that our government helped orchestrate this. And then I have to tell people, I said, look, if you haven't done any work on this, any research on this, if you believe anything I say, you have to just at least start looking at this. And you have to keep it basic. And that's where I have to fall back on, you know, just like, I actually had neighbors of mine ask me to go out to dinner. They just wanted to go out with me and just talk 9/11. The first people have done it. Most people are women like the plague because they're just afraid to talk about it. Because they might have doubts, but they just don't want to go there. I mean, you know, my friends avoid me. But anyway, I just, you know, like I mentioned, you know, I didn't particularly like Press for Truth in the beginning, but I remember giving that to my daughter, or to my sister. And she, you know, I remember when I first talked about 9/11, she just couldn't believe it. And I said, so just look at this, okay? And just pretend, it's, compare it to your first grade reader, first time you learn how to read. Well, this is what it is. Hopefully it will just put a seed in your mind that now you'll go on to the next step and start researching some of this. you know, the towers and the, you know, all the things that come out about 9/11. You know, there's no, you know, the people are amazed. I'll just tell them, I said, you know, no one's proved that there was 19 hijackers on there. I don't even have to go beyond there. You know, I haven't gotten any flight manifest from anyone. The FBI won't release it. Don't you think that's kind of strange? You know, again, I have it easier because I say, count now, imagine your son was murdered. Your daughter was murdered. Okay? And what's their investigation? They can't even get to the point where they know who did it. They have no proof, I'll tell them. Well, at least I have to look me in the face and say, my God, is that true? I mean, I have a support group in Philadelphia. We've been seeing each other. I remember this took like 4 years afterwards. And I told them about, you know, I hate talking about 9/11. I told them about Tower 7. And they had no clue it fell down. So when you're talking to people, you really have to keep it simple. I can't get into the blowback and the Al-Qaeda being in Bosnia and in Kosovo, and our dealings with the Muslim Brotherhood forever and ever, you know, because that's just too far going. So I have to start with the basics with people that just most people have not, unless they're, you know, people that have looked into it like you and everybody that's listening to your radio station. But other than that, you just have to keep it simple. And I will tell them outright. I said, look, there's no question in my mind. And that couple that asked me out, I mean, they're my age, and they said, well, look, it's amazing what you've told us. And, you know, we spent 3 hours at dinner, but he says, I still can't believe it. But I said, well, I don't really care if you don't believe it, but at least make the effort to, you know, look at this video, look at these videos, read certain, I gave him certain books to read. And I said, you can't tell me this country hasn't done things like this in the past, you know. And I said, this is what they do, you know. So that's, you know, I have to keep it as simple as possible because it just turns people off so much that I can't lecture them. So you just got to be to the point. But my first point will be that I am 100% positive that the orchestration, the facilitation of 9/11 came from America, came from intelligence agencies. That's, you know, again, what agencies do around the world. Bankers, obviously, it has to be media people. But I can't go really beyond that because it just, they turn a blank stare. You know, if you haven't looked at this at all, can you imagine someone in my support group, they had no clue that, you know, Building 7 came down. So it's really tough. And, you know, it's very frustrating, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, people aren't even aware of just the cover-up, you know.
Yeah.
And the story that's told in that movie, Press for Truth, people aren't even aware that family members had to fight tooth and nail.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get this, what they called an exposition.
Yes. That's why I'd like to, I would give anything to move to New York because then I would be anonymous and I wouldn't get pissed off at the people there. You know, I go in my neighborhood, I'm friendly to everybody, but again, they'd rather lose an order than talk about 9/11. They just don't want to talk about it, you know. And it really it's bad because then you don't get a chance to talk about my son. You know, it's like, yeah, they're ignoring you, but then my son's, you know, he's dead, he died, but then no one wants to hear anything about him. You know what I mean? So it's in both ways, it's hurtful. So you really get angry. You know, it's just, I don't know. I definitely have to work on my anger. But it's frustrating because you do this all day, and it's, every I don't do it all day. But it's tough. Please want to talk about what you read.
We've got Betsy on the line in Pennsylvania. Hey,
oh,
Betsy, how's it going?
Hey, Cosmos, how are you? Hi, Bob.
Hey, Betsy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
You've been doing some real good work out there. We
what
got the other
trying?
Half of the of the Incredible Two out there in Pennsylvania.
Well, we're trying, and I called in for that specific reason because I've been listening to you tonight, and the point about trying to reach, you know, other people that won't even go there. And just as Bob has been talking and all the research that I've done, I mean, you know, what a traumatic 2 years it's been for me to learn how what our government's been involved in, et cetera, et cetera. You know, some people have known about this for 10 and 20 years, and I'm pretty kind of new at all this. And, you know, I agree, everything that Bob talked about tonight, I believe to be true. And it's a very difficult thing, as we all know in our choir, to talk about this to anyone who knows this to anyone new to it, because they'll look at you like you're totally crazy. So this is what, and through, you know, what I've learned with John Gold, what I'm learning is that we've got to really do this in baby steps with most people. With most people on the left and certainly on the right, like people like Dom Giordano. And I think with, and the whole point of these movies was to break through to the other side. I hear the music.
Yeah, we've got a break coming up. Betsy, will you stay with us the other side of this break?
Yes, I may. I can.
Great. We're heading up to our final segment. We will be right back after this break on Truth Revolution Radio. Truth Revolution Radio. We're talking with 9/11 family member Bob McElvain, and I want to thank Bob for joining us today, and thanks for putting up with the technical difficulties we've been having today, and also thanks to our listeners for bearing with us. And we've got Betsy Metz on the line. Betsy has been hosting 9/11 Truth Tuesdays in Wayne, Pennsylvania, for January and February, and now I believe you've extended it through March. You guys are playing Press for Truth and other movies every Tuesday out there.
Yes, we're hoping to extend it in March. That's the plan. I just need
and
to
you were talking about the need for taking baby steps, and I wanted to let you just finish your thought there before we got cut off.
Yeah, what I'm learning through in this process to do this smartly, at least out here, is we just need to take it in baby steps and go from, like, point A to B, and not, as I'm starting to refer to, as point A to T. T, let's say, being, you know, controlled demolition or explosives, because a lot of people have a hard time going there or reaching across that far. Like, for instance, the people like Dom Giordano who say, it always comes back to, so how can you think our government could do this? So it's like, let's just forget all that. Let's just start at point A, watch Press for Truth, and see that there's been a cover-up. And that's what, I mean, this was a really well-thought-out plan that John and I had here in Wayne, which movies to show. And I really debated showing other movies, but I went back and forth, and I figured there was no downside to holding off on other movies that would, you know, talk about explosive issues, pardon the pun, but, you know, things of that nature. We don't need that right now. We can just start off with what some people refer to these movies as soft, you know, the softer movies. And, you know, they're not so soft, but that's how some people might call them. We're seeing when people come out, they cannot believe, they're literally blown away, there's another pun, not intended, by Press for Truth. And the one night that we had 75 people for the first show at 5, this was when we had, when Bob was there, and there were maybe 5 other people, 9/11 VIPs attending. We had 75 people for the 5 p.m. show, and maybe 100 and I think we saw maybe 150, maybe even 160 for the 7 p.m. show, and over 100, maybe even 125 people stayed for the 9 p.m. panel afterwards, and it was a Tuesday night, so it was amazing, and it was an amazing response, and they, just for them to see all of this, I mean, it made such an impression on them, and this is what we're discovering. This is what we need to do with the people that don't want to go there. And I'm thinking of the whole nationalist faith issue that David Ray Griffin has discussed and that has come out on his recent DVD on his talk in Denver, Colorado. I think it was August 19th, 2007. And that is, I think, what we need to bridge. And I believe with right now, Dom Giordano, even though he's kind of making fun of this, I think that, you know, his question is, why are these people out on the so-called main line? You know, what are they seeing this? Why are they spending their own money to do this? I mean, these are not, you know, your typical, and I'll use this, you know, crazy conspiracy theorists. You know, I'm thinking that he's saying there's more to this, and I'm thinking that it's an opportunity and we need to grab him. And I think that he would be willing to put, you know, family members on his show. And if he is, what a great audience to try and reach. We need to use this as an opportunity. You know, he needs to see Press for Truth.
I think that's a good way to look at it, and I can't think of anyone better to get that job done than you. And first, he's got to spend some time alone in a room with Bob McElvain.
I agree with that, but I think what he should do, if Bob can just hold his hand, walk him in, make him sit next to him, watch the movie, and then spend time with Bob afterwards.
Well, you're right there. That's probably what he should do, Steve, just, you know, Press for Truth. And again, you know, there'll be some sort of seed there. You're going to have an honest discussion.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It depends on who our audience is, because for some people, it really is like they've never heard of Building 7. They see it for the first time, and they're like, oh, my God, whoa. And it kind of clicks them into the whole thing. And then there's, you know, millions and millions of other people who just aren't going to respond to it, like, you know, you were saying. And there's we have to tune into our audience and figure out what's right for them. And we've got so many just basic questions. Bob, we're heading up right to the end of the show here. And Bob, I wanted to ask you, with the 9/11 truth movement, what do you think it's doing right, and what do you think it's doing wrong?
Well, I think it's like the Democratic Party. There's so many factions to it. It's very dysfunctional.
Right.
Although I will never criticize anyone, because I think anyone, you know, that speaks up is doing a good job, right? But it's like, you know, again, like the Democratic Party. There's so many different, you know, environmentalists, you know, pro-abortion, this and that. And it's like by design. You know, like it's like Congress itself. You know, the whole presidential candidacy, they're talking about different issues. But no one ever talks about both parties. That's all they do is war. They talk about taxation. Well, I say to people, where's your taxes going? So the 9/11 truth movement, I think a lot of people are paranoid. You know, you have COINTELPRO. You know, everyone's called me. I've talked to everyone. Okay, and I'm polite to everyone, and I listen to everyone. I mean, you just can't believe how many ends I'm being tugged by each arm, by each leg people are tugging at me, you know. But I think that's the biggest problem, because a lot of people are paranoid, and they don't trust everyone. And it's, you know, because you hear COINTELPRO, and, you know, people say, oh, I know so-and-so, he's been, you know, I know there's COINTELPRO there. And then the opposite, you know, I'll talk to someone, you know, I won't mention names. They say, oh, no, they're in COINTELPRO, you know, and then the disinformation and all. So it really has a lot of people confused. And I don't know what the answer is. And I think, you know, that's why the Republican Party's done so well. They have a defined agenda, and it's been that agenda since the 70s, more military spending. And I don't know what, you have people that are just talking about the buildings. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but I sort of draw away from it, because I have to remember this is about me. I have to learn who killed my son, and I can't be worried about everyone else, because you can't believe how many people calling me with their ideas and this and that. And again, I won't dare criticize anyone, because everyone's trying, but you just don't know who the one is spreading disinformation. It's like, I really believe this. We're getting 95% of the information to hide the 5% of the truth. And until we get the 5% of the truth, we're never going to have a solution to this. That's why I personally now I'm concentrating on the people who talked about Al-Qaeda before 9/11. That's all I do now, is read about that. And I think these are the people, you know, I personally would want to go after. You know, the Mueller's, the Richard Clark's, the American Enterprise Institute, Olin Foundation. These are the people that have the money, the foundations, and, you know, BCCI, and these are the things I think that this is like the 5%. Everything's concentrating just from the buildings, the put options. You know, the 19 Arabs and all so forth and so on, but I think that this has all been force-fed to us. And so I really believe that. We have plenty of information, but it's not enough to bring down or, you know, really get to the ultimate truth.
To the activists who are out on the street, who are creating visibility about 9/11, doing outreach in their communities, what message would you like to see them conveying?
I think they're great. Like I told Luke, I remember I was with Luke and that crew, and they said, "Do you think we're a little too militant in saying it's an inside job?" And I personally can't do it because my anger is just I just get so upset if someone comes up to me and gives me a finger or something. Well, I'm just really having a difficult time controlling my anger. But I think what they're doing is, but it's just and like they had Philadelphia Truth, and I haven't seen the video yet, but I was going to go down to it, but Willie Brown. And they said they really got some good answers from him. I think what they're doing is great. Confronting people wherever they go. Confronting David Rockefeller is phenomenal. The fact that people are on their ass all the time. I think, you know, those activists to me are the best thing that's happening in 9/11. Because I can't do it. I get too upset. But I think what we are change, people out in San Diego, I saw a picture of you out there. Some clip?
Yes.
At San Diego? When that Luke was out there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so I think what they're doing, what you guys are doing, are great. It's just because confronting the people, and they're the people, you know, the David Rockefellers. I mean, I'm not saying he was involved in 9/11, but he is the power broker of the world, one of the power brokers of the world. The Rockefellers dictated policy in Iran. What happened in Iran is his fault, period. I mean, you know, Carter had nothing to say about what was happening in Iran. So, well, I think what they're doing is great, the street activists.
And there are activists, there are many, many of us all around the world who are going to keep fighting for justice, for the truth about 9/11, and for justice for 9/11, for you and your son, and we're not going to stop until we get justice.
Well, Ray, God bless you.
God bless you, Bob McElvain. Thanks so much for joining me today on this show. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Okay. All right, take care of yourself, Cosmos, all right?
You take care too, Bob.
All right. All right, bye-bye.